Digital 410 Media proudly presents the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast with your hosts, Don Abernathy, Jeff Copsetta, and Dennis Blocker.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast, your favorite World War II-based podcast. Jeff is here. He's back. And we have two fantastic guests we've been booking for quite a while. We're happy to have them on. Before I introduce them, Jeff, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm good, man. I'm ready to go. It's an exciting show tonight, and really looking forward to sharing it with the world.
I am too. We're very excited. We've had George Luz Jr. on. Obviously, we had Henry Sludge on for years. And joining us tonight is the one and only Gene and Debbie. Now, Debbie is the granddaughter, and Gene is the son of what we, the general public, know as Wild Bill Garnier. But Debbie, I was watching one of your videos, and you were educating your TikTok audience and, well, the rest of the world, myself included, that it's not exactly the way your family's last name is correctly pronounced. Is that the case?
How do you pronounce your last name?
I pronounce my last name Guarnieri. Now, here's the background on this. My grandfather, we have papers where my grandfather was Guarnieri, like the violin.
Okay.
When he came over here, they just changed it to N-E-R-E. My father says Bill Guarnier. My brother says Guarnieri. My cousins say Guarnier, Guarnieri. So it sounds French. People think it was French, but no, it's Italian. And it's just the way you're growing up. It's just the way I pronounced it. I don't think there was any. You could say Guarnier, and it's my father always said Bill Guarnier. You might have said it sound like it was pronounced Garnier. That's the way my dad pronounced it all the time.
Interestingly enough, that must have been a common thing around the time, because the comedian Adam Carolla tells a story about how him and his father go by the name Carolla, but his father's brother goes by Carollo. And he asks his dad, like, why is Uncle John Carollo and we're Carolla? I don't know. It's just the way it was. So.
Right. It saves him leaving the money in the will.
I think it starts with Ellis Island.
Yeah.
When they didn't care what your name was. They just gave, these people were so glad to get here. You could have changed. I have a friend named Phil Paul. And he's Russian, but his last name was Polovachevich or something. Way a big, long name. And they just chopped that whole lace piece off.
That'll be easier on you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So give us the, Gene, give us the background on your father a little bit. I know that before the war, he went off to join the Civilians Conservation Corps, right? And then he wanted to enlist in some early officer training, but was like super young. He's like 15 years old, correct?
That is correct. What happened was he was the youngest of 10 children. And there was like a stables across the street from his house. He would sleep there. This is completely different than what we know today. And his mother wanted him. She lied about his age, said he was 17, to send him to this CBS school. And he went there for 3 years for officers. He was going to be officer trained. And what happened was World War II broke out and the school closed. That's how he stopped going there. But he was underage when he went there. So when he went to join the paratroopers, he never mentioned that he had this background. And he just, you know, he became a staff sergeant and the rest is history in the series. But, that was it. He was he slept. It was amazing that I don't know how 10 kids could fit in a row house. I grew up in a row house.
Yeah.
And he said we slept wherever we could, kid. And that was the way it was. And there's a lot of pictures of him that we have of him as a kid. He might have more pictures than you do as a kid, and even myself. Hmm. And I don't know how that happened. He has black and white, saddle shoes on. And
are you sure it's not one kid and a kid?
No. And all the guys on the corner. So he's with all the, all his little Guido friends with the hats and the jackets and all. It was pretty neat to see some of these pictures. But he never talked about anything. And, I have a lot of information about it, but he's not the kind of parent, that generation of the kind of, where they would sit today. If you have children, either one of you have children, you're kind of guiding them through the path of, righteousness and where to have what mistake not to make that you did. I tell this story. When I got out of high school, I was 17 years old. I graduated high school. I was in the academic courses. Back in them days, you could pick I was in the academic course only because in ninth grade, you could pick a language. And they offered Italian. I didn't speak Italian, so I took Italian, and I wound up with trigonometry and everything else, chemistry, physics, stuff that had nothing to do with Italian. And I was saying, what did I get myself into? But when I graduated, I had the marks. I was a C student, whatever. And my dad asked me, if I wanted to go to West Point or Annapolis. Now, he had connections unbeknownst to me, but unbeknownst to me, this is the God's honest truth. This is 1964, 17. There's no internet. There's nothing. I'm living in South Philadelphia. And I said, I don't want to do that. And he said, all right, kid, get a job. That was the whole conversation. My mother didn't talk to me about it. And I didn't go to college because he didn't have any money. But I probably could have went for free because he was disabled. So that's just the way life was in the 60s. Now, it changed immensely. Now, when Debbie does something, we have a conversation. We talk about it. She's still my kid. And even though she's... We're in your 40s now. Yeah.
No.
Even though Debbie,
I remember
40. We try and guide them and help them through. That doesn't mean my parents, they didn't have that wherewithal to steer you in the direction that you probably should have went to. I mean, I could have went to West Point or Annapolis, and I would have did fine because physically I was good in that, you know, in 17 years old. But yeah. That's the background of basically how my dad was. And my mother didn't say anything. Whatever he said was like, you know, whatever.
I was thinking about you tonight, Gene. I was thinking, I would have to imagine your father being the person that he was after the war and how he didn't let his newly acquired disability slow him down. I can only imagine that the phrase amongst his children of, I can't do it, is probably not something you would have in your vocabulary.
No, the only one that didn't think he was handicapped was him. I got a place in Margate. And when I bought the house, we gutted it. And my father, this is the God's honest truth, my dad had all the kids that were younger. But had all the kids. My father would come down there every weekend. It was lath, you know, lath on the walls with the plaster. I would pull the lath down with a crowbar, drop it all on the floor.
Hot mess.
He'd be sitting on the floor. I'd give him boxes and rope, and he tied all the lath together. And he worked his tail off. And I treated him like he was like a regular worker. I had to carry the boxes out, but he was like a machine. I don't know how he got. I'll be 78 this month. He was this age when Band of Brothers came out.
Yeah.
I kid you not. Debbie could vouch for this. This guy went everywhere. He was never home. I have every year in work, I would get him one of them, you know, calendar books. And it, right along, his book was full. People would pick him up daily. He'd go out to breakfast. He was in Europe. He was in this. He was in California. He was up in Sea Malarkey and in Oregon. He was all over the place. And he never slowed down. He never slowed down.
Yeah. I misworded my question. I guess what I meant to say is you as a child raising up, when he asked you to do something or someone expected you to do something, I imagine with him being your father, the phrase "I can't" couldn't come out of your vocabulary, couldn't come out of your mouth.
No, it couldn't come out of my vocabulary to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember he had a 59 Buick and I took it out one night. You know, I was probably 17, whatever, 18. And I was racing some kid in reverse. And the transmission went in reverse. It broke. So when I came home, there was a parking space in front of the house, and he was sitting in the window, and I put it in reverse. I knew it wasn't going to work, and I never told him that anyway. You know, if he's listening now, I don't know. I blew the reverse that race. That was that stupid stuff. But yeah, he didn't, there was nothing he couldn't do. That's the truth. There was nothing that he did everything.
What's the top end speed in reverse on a 68 Buick?
I don't know if I even won the race. The point that I was sort of racing an Alsa beer, but it's just, you know, stupid things you did when as a kid. But he was there. He would actually literally kill for me, my brother, or my mother. He would actually kill somebody. I knew that. We knew that then that something was different about him because he would get in not an argument, but somebody but a confrontation or something, and he'd have a pipe in his hand. He's ready to go to the mattresses. But we didn't think anything of him. He even collected for my grandfather, my mother's father, when he got out of service. He was collecting money for loans. This guy's got a wooden leg. He was a different kind of guy. But he was gentle as a lamb, unless you crossed him. I was always on the end, so I didn't have to worry about it.
Best place to be.
Yeah. He was good. He was a good guy. He was easygoing. He was never violent or anything. He was a nice guy. And he was a very personable, and he was a big asset to the Band of Brothers after the series. He was probably the most popular veteran going all over the place. I mean, he was in that one of them. They came out with a book, the most important high veterans. He was number 56 out of 100. It was pretty. He was pretty cool, but he never got caught up in that. He never was above anything. He got when he raised money, him and Babe sent money to shifty parents who needed money and help, and they would send money to him. And they didn't have money. So they would just, what little they had, they just gave away.
I know the book series, long before the miniseries came, the book series came from Steve Ambrose, you know, visiting a couple of people and then becoming aware of the reunions that your father was basically key in putting together for all those years.
How father many reunions? Yeah.
Do you remember, like, what your father's response was when someone said, hey, I want to come sit down and talk to you guys and, you know, to you and your brothers in arms, if you will, about a book I want to write? How did that kind of present itself to him, and what was his first thoughts on that?
The way it happened was the reunion was in New Orleans. My father would excuse me, set up the reunions every year, and he'd pick up whatever. They moved it around. This year was going to be in New Orleans. And there was a little blurb in the newspaper that the 101st Airborne was going to be so-and-so, and so, you know, something in New Orleans. And Stephen Ambrose sent a Marine over, I think it was, to go and talk to these people. So this is from my father. When a guy came in to the hospitality room and he wanted to talk to people and all, my father basically threw him out and said, who the frig are you, kid? You know, he's asking questions. And then it's, you know, Stephen Ambrose came. I mean, it settled down where they, but they didn't let him invade their privacy. You know, they were very close, and there was, it wasn't like after Band of Brothers where everybody wanted to be around him. Nobody really wanted to be around them. Just their intimate family, wife, maybe a couple kids would go. George Les was one of them. They couldn't leave George Les home because they already liked the house on fire. But most of the kids didn't go, and it was just family. So anybody else that went really wasn't allowed.
Well, that's plus really, I imagine at that point, obviously before the book came out, your father probably put in so much time, energy, and effort organizing these events. He wasn't, I would assume, probably wasn't going to let it, his event that he'd been planning and organizing for so long, get hijacked by some guy who wants to interview some people for the book.
Well, remember, too, there was so many different groups of World War II, Marines, Navy, sure, whatever, Army, Airborne. And a lot of them didn't stick together at all.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't have reunions. My dad started maybe running the reunions, I think, at 47, 48, when he was able. You know, he was in the hospital with Joe Toy for a year in 1946, 47. And what he did was he just became the centerpiece, and he loved doing this. So, and they would get together, and then they would try and get one more person next year. You'd bring somebody. And that's how it grew. And I think one year they had like 85 of the men were there in California. And he was close to a lot of these people that I heard their names. I knew of them. I'll tell you a real quick story. When my dad had a heart attack. No, he didn't have a heart attack. I'm sorry. I don't know where they were. He was getting blood clots. And this is probably in 1969. He was getting blood clots. And they took him at that time, the naval base, you know, the hospital was there. And they were doing the tests on his back and this and that and all these tests. And they came, narrowed it down to, it was his wooden leg.
Prosthetic.
It was made of maple. And his leg was basically, I told this story before, when he had his leg in his prosthetic, it was his bare leg. There was no stocking on it or nothing.
Wow.
So the way he put his leg
on. And it was heavy.
Yeah, the leg was heavy as hell. It was maple. And it just bent the knee. And here's the way he put his leg on, for people who are not familiar with this. And I did tell this at the World War II Museum that time. He wore a stump sock. A stump sock was open at both ends. So when he would put his leg on, my brother and I carried his leg down from upstairs to many times. So we were familiar with this. He put his leg on. But before he put his leg on, he put the stump sock on. And he put the stump sock on. And I'm sure he used powder, whatever he used. And then he had a metal valve in the bottom, like a screw, you know, screw valve. Mm-hmm. He would take the stump sock and push it into the valve, out the hole, and he put the leg on, and he would pull the stump sock off his leg. So his stump was basically bare inside the wood. But what boggles my mind as I got older, it was a vacuum. I don't know how his leg stayed on. I have no idea. He went all over, but he went to work. He did everything. He drove stick, which he wasn't allowed to do. But it was amazing that, and as I got older, I'm thinking, how did this guy drag this wooden leg around on vacuum?
Yeah.
And he straps or hooks or like the, you know, bungees or nothing like that. It was just amazing.
Yeah, I know the modern day ones still use vacuum, but they're a hell of a lot lighter, the carbon fiber and everything else. So the fact that
you got a piece of metal on the bottom, it's real light. This was heavy. And he would give the wooden legs out to the kids up the street when he got a new one. It was amazing. One kid got the wood leg up the street, put it in the basement, and his sister went down screaming because she saw this leg laying on the floor. It was a big leg. It was heavy.
It'd be worth a lot of money right now.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
You can make a table out of it. Mm-hmm. 4 feet.
I'm just sitting back enjoying it. So, you know, for the listeners that don't know, was telling Gene earlier, growing up in South Jersey, I just appreciate hearing his accent. It's kind of taking me home, that Philly accent. But, you know, we've got a lot of similarities. My last name has been butchered since we came over from Portugal. It was Cabecera. Mm-hmm. And the first paycheck my great-grandfather got in the Navy said Joe Copsetta. And I guess that's me.
And to them, that was good enough. Kid, look, I got the money.
That's it. Yeah. The story goes, if he was going to fix it, he was afraid he wouldn't get paid. So I guess I'm Copsetta now.
And go ahead. Finish with yourself. Sorry.
Well, but similar things where some of the, you know, the sisters didn't adopt the Copsetta name. But what ended up happening was his parents adopted the Copsetta name. Which was really interesting. And then my dad's the oldest of 12 kids. You know, they grew up in the 50s and 60s, of course. So a lot of those same similarities. It was definitely a different time. And hearing your dad's story and thinking about my family, it really does highlight how different things were. But not just that, how different men were. And, you know, I think that's something that we really like to emphasize at What's the Scuttlebutt is, you know, every time you ask a World War II veteran about the Greatest Generation, they always point to their parents. But your dad and his comrades, they really were the Greatest Generation. And you know, I did a tour overseas as well in the Army, and I thought every single day about how it could have been worse. And I thought about the World War II vets. You know, when we went over the berm in Iraq, we weren't hitting Omaha Beach. And when we got back from a mission, you know, guys were pulling off their body armor, sitting down and playing Halo, you know, or some video game to get their mind off of stuff. Or, you know, they were getting mail from home. And, you know, I lived in Saddam Hussein's son's palace. So when we got back from a mission, we had a gold toilet.
Yeah, things were different. And also, too, that generation, and I don't know, I'm speaking for myself, and I'm sure some of my friends are like that. You couldn't go up to your father and say, you know, I love you. You had to say, hey, love you, man. Yeah, I mean, it had to be like a joke. You know what I'm saying? Right. That's just the way it was. There wasn't that intimacy there that there is today. And my mother was completely different. Right. You know what I'm saying? But with your dad, like when I went in the service, my father said, take it easy, kid. I mean, he didn't, you know, like it was, see you later. He didn't flinch or budge.
He got softer in his old age, though.
Yeah, but anyway. Sure.
Like him.
Yeah.
Gene, what years did you serve?
I got drafted in 65, and I went to Vietnam in 66, 67. And my father, at that time, you can go to the airport and get in the train. And he just said, yeah, take it easy, kid. I mean, there was no, and I didn't join I was a paratrooper. I didn't join the paratrooper because he was in a paratrooper. I joined the paratrooper because I was 19 and didn't have the brains to get out of the rain. I thought this would be great, you know, the paratrooper. And, you know, it is what it is. It's a different time. Like you said, Vietnam, when I was there, completely different than what my dad was in. They were going home when the war was over. He came home in a plane missing a leg.
Yeah.
And they sent his Tommy gun home with him. Not on a plane. Johnny Martin brought it home with him.
Didn't Babe send one home piecemeal? And his wife made him get rid of it years later.
Babe, I don't know if Babe brought a Tommy gun home. Babe did something. He did bring some guns home. And Babe, my dad even had Lugers and stuff. He gave it all away. Yeah. I talked to Don Malarkey. I said, Don, how many Lugers do you have? He said, let me see. I think I had about 60.
Wow.
He said, I threw about 30 or 40 of them away, and I put them in a shit can beside the officers again, and he burned them. This is like, these guys were completely different than
Well, Jeff was talking about his time in service, and then you were talking about your time. to me, never have served, but just thinking back to your father's generation and what their uniforms were made up of. And then comparatively speaking to your time during Vietnam, I mean, just the flak jackets alone and the helmets and the armor, then not to mention the advancement in technology of Jeff's time in service. But I often tell people who aren't really super up to date with World War II as far as uniforms go, with the exception of the airborne jumpsuit, I tell people, you know, when they landed on D-Day, they were essentially landing in their Sunday best. They had on wool pants and wool shirts, the same wool pants and shirts that they would have worn to church.
I have my father's jumpsuit.
Yeah, it's just the fact that what they went through and what they survived in by today's standards is just,
well,
you know,
like I said, most of them, people have told me, they said, you know, a few people have told me, they're friends of my dad's, they said, if your father had two legs now, he probably would have been arrested. All the stuff he was involved in, he was like crazy. I mean, he was a good guy, though.
Yeah,
he was like Josie Wales, kind of going, quiet. You know what I mean? He was a good guy.
When the series came, when the book came out, was that the first time your family really knew in depth of what he went through?
Not the book.
The book came out, what, 92?
92, the book came out.
You know when I knew when the book came out? 96, my mother told me.
Really?
Yeah, they didn't do that. Listen, I was at the reunion, I think, in 94. It was at Valley Forge. That's when Sobel's sister came. She was invited.
Yeah.
And she came to the reunion and kind of worked through some of the things that were, you know, happening sure. in the book of Sobel. And I was there. My daughter at that time was two. And she was walking all over giving
not,
these.
Not me.
Not her. She was always older. And then, so, yeah, my youngest daughter was two. And she was handing out, bringing beers to the, you know, Shifty and all the guys that were there. And I didn't know anything about a book. And they were tipping her. And there was a lot of people there. My father had the mummers there. You know that from South Jersey. And I didn't know nothing about no book. And then in 96, my mother said, you know, there's a book out, a Band of Brothers. They might make a movie, but, you know, they're all crazy and this and that. And my mom died in 97. So the next thing I knew, my father was doing this Band of Brothers thing with Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg.
Was it
I didn't know about the book until 96.
Were you surprised what the impact on your family and your family's name was just from how big the show blew up?
No, you know what I was amazed about? My father was still just like I'm talking to. He was just a regular person like you were in there. But we would go places. And, I mean, you want to think that he was Vito Corleone or somebody. I mean, like, people would come up to him, and he was, like I said, he was good to everybody. Kids, he would give hats. He would give pins to his hat. He would give his shirts to people. He was just, he really embraced, my mom wasn't around, so he really embraced this and really did a good thing for Easy Company as far as, you know, publicity did. He was all over the place. And we went to the Reading Air Show. It was like insane. The line was from here to the Vatican, waiting to talk to him.
I bet. Hometown yeah, show?
Was, yeah, yeah. At
Forget Reading about Air it. Show.
Yeah, it was pretty nice. And I was still just amazed that he was my father and he was so popular and it didn't mean anything to him. You know, he wasn't caught up in being popular.
So, Debbie, yeah, you're kind of taking the charge now of doing some of these conferences and World War II themed panels every once in a while as well, right? To help keep your grandfather's name alive?
We do that. We do that. We don't, you know, but we're, Debbie has a 501c for my dad. We have a statue that Debbie had financed and helped get, you know, raise money, and we have a statue. In fact, he has two statues, and yeah, we're Debbie raised money and we give money to veterans. We help Gary Sinise and whoever else we could help. We do that.
Have you guys kind of noticed? I don't know. Maybe for you, it's remained the same, or have you noticed when the show? I think what was it, Jeff? Last 6 months or so, Band of Brothers and the Pacific Bow started. Trending on Netflix. Have you guys kind of noticed a re-increase in interest in your father and your grandfather?
I don't know if I ever saw a decrease. I mean, I started on TikTok when COVID hit.
Yeah.
Just because I was by myself all the time doing funny videos. And then I think I posted one video about my grandfather and it took off. So I don't think I ever saw a decrease. There might be more interest in it now because it's on Netflix.
I've seen it increase. I have a small eBay store.
Okay.
And I have hundreds of books signed by my dad. And why do I have hundreds of books? I would order 10 to 15 cases of books before we go to Reading Air Show. And I would bring him down 3 cases of books at a time. He had them signed in a day. And then he would take off the top, give some away to say. So we went to the Reading Air Show. I had all these books. And every time he'd come up my house, he'd sign all kind of stuff. You know, he would sign pictures.
That's his book. Do you have a signed copy?
No, I don't. But I want to. I never thought I'd have the opportunity to tell you this. Jeff has heard this story, but I'm going to tell it because you guys are here. I grew up with a learning disability. From the second grade until I graduated high school, I didn't have to take math proficiency test or reading because I had a learning disability. I could hardly read at an eighth grade level when I graduated high school. And as you can imagine, someone who doesn't like to read, the last thing I have any interest in at all were books. Well, I moved to California shortly after 9/11. During 9/11, I built ambulances for Horton. I think 8 of the 12 ambulances that were destroyed on 9/11 were our trucks. We had sent some stuff up there. Long story short, the economy crashed. I got laid off, so I ended up moving to California. During that time, I spent a lot of time watching the Band of Brothers series because it's right after, you know, that's when the series came out. It was right after 9/11. I was flying back to Kentucky to see my family, and someone got me a Barnes & Noble gift card for Christmas. I'm like, what is a guy who doesn't like to read going to do with a Barnes & Noble gift card? I was in the Florence airport, and I saw this book on the shelf, and I bought it. I'm like, okay, I love Band of Brothers series. I love Babe, and I love Wild Bill, so I bought this book. This is not only the first World War II book in my library, but this is the first book as an adult I read all the way through, and I've read it twice.
Easy reading.
Not only is it easy reading and the subject matter keeps you riveted, but looking across my podcast studio, I probably got 150 World War II books, and I've probably read 15 of them, and I read all the time now daily, and my reading comprehension's gone through the roof, to the fact that even this podcast has a segment at the end of the show where we talk about the books that we're reading. And so a lot of that comes from this book. If it wasn't from this book, because this was the book that taught me, if you're reading about something you have interest in, reading doesn't suck. But when you're going through school, you have reading problems and people making you read books you have no interest in. So it was this book that made me realize I love to read. So
I learned. And another thing too, when I come back from Vietnam, I said to my dad, what did you do in a war? He said, this is the whole conversation. I'm not making this up. He said, the war's over, kid. Forget about it. And that's the end.
That was
the end of that conversation. There's no more conversation after that.
What year was that? What year was that conversation?
Yeah, there was no
67.
67, 68.
Yeah, 67 I came home. And he didn't, there was no conversation.
And that was it.
Get it? When he asked me to go to West Point and Annapolis, I said no. He said, "All right, kid, get a job," and that was the end of that conversation.
Well, it's crazy that he had that conversation, and unbeknownst to him, 38 some odd years later, he would be a detrimental voice in keeping his war and the memory of the guys he served with alive.
He enjoyed doing that. I remember getting a phone call from Johnny Martin when my dad was getting these tests in the hospital. And he probably could have died if these blood clots, you know, got through in his heart. And I was 21 and I answered the phone. In fact, Debbie still has the phone number, my phone number from when we were a kid on her pod, on her 501C.
I kept it for the 501. Yeah.
501C, it's still Fulton 93094 Bananas at 215 in there. So I answered the phone and I know him, but I never met Johnny Martin at that time. And he calls me up and he says, hello. I said, hello. He said, who's this? I said, this is Gene. He said, all right. He says, this is Johnny Martin. I said, oh, how you doing, Johnny? He said, how's your father doing? I said, he's doing okay. You know, blah, blah, blah. And he couldn't talk to him because my dad was in the hospital. So he was checking up on him. And I said, yeah, he's doing all right. He says, well, I want you to listen to this. I said, okay. He says, no, I want you to listen to this. I said, okay. He said, if he needs doctors, money, vehicles, planes, anything your father needs, you call me. I said, okay. He says, no, listen to me. And he said the same thing over. And he said, and I want you to convey this. If he needs anything, you call me. So in my head, as a 21-year-old guy, I'm thinking to myself, geez, I could use $3,000. I got to get a car, you know. But that's the way, that's the friendship. And he was really, Johnny Martin was one of his closest friends all through his life. And but that's the way these people were. And when my dad ran the reunions, unlike they had after the Band of Brothers, they had, my father called it corkage and for the liquor and all this stuff. At the end of the at the end of the reunion, my father would get a bill from the hotel, and they said, "Okay, you owe $973." You know, for the room, the hospital, whatever it was. And my father would look, and he had $430, right? And he would holler help. And then it was Johnny Martin, it was Gordon, or it was Carwood Lipton would just write the check. And that was the end of it. So, I mean, that's the way they're, and my father never asked for anything. He never wanted any money. He didn't take anything from anybody. But that's the way these people are. He was like the most honest person I ever met, my father. He was the most honest person I ever knew.
Was Babe around your house as much as we're led to believe when you're growing up?
Babe was around my house a lot when I was a kid. Yes, Babe was around my house more when Band of Brothers came out because he didn't drive. My dad, yeah, Babe and my father were like thick as you know anything. And but remember, Babe was around my house. But remember, at this time, Babe was still working before Band of Brothers when I'm growing up. He's married. And I saw Babe, but Babe walked everywhere. Babe would walk from his house to my father's house. So yeah, Babe was around a lot, but Babe wasn't around as much as after the Band of Brothers.
After
my mother died, Babe was around more because my father now would pick him up. My father didn't have any commitments with my mother or something. Yeah, they went everywhere.
That's fantastic.
I'm still just thinking about the impact of that series. I mean, I saw for the first time when I was overseas, we would put on an episode, you know, after a bad mission or something. And, it didn't even resonate with me then like it does now. I watch it every year, every November. My wife, it's part of our, it's just what we do. It's tradition. As the weather turns colder in Texas, cold enough to at least try to have a fire in the fireplace, we put on Band of Brothers. It's just not the beginning of Christmas season without it. And we've been doing that now, geez, well, my oldest is 17. It's probably as long as he's been alive, we've been doing that. And it's crazy to think that every time I watch it, it gets harder for me to watch. More things come back the more I watch it. And it's just so powerful, and just a prime example today. And I've got a little eBay store myself. Was in a conversation with a guy in Scranton, talking about something I've got online here, and of course, you know, like, oh, this guy's a kind of, you know, nice guy, must be, you know, collector, and told him about the podcast, and he said, that's ironic, I'm watching Band of Brothers now. Mm. I thought, this is just unbelievable, the depth that series has. And how it has been the cornerstone of everything since then.
Yeah, it is. I watched the Pacific. I went to the premiere of the Pacific with my dad in New Orleans. And it's not the same. I didn't, and don't get me wrong, I think the Marines had it harder than the Army. I mean, it was like a daily, you know, daily barrage for these Marines, muds, the dysentery. I mean, all kind of disasters in every island they went to. But I watched the Pacific. I could never get wrapped around. There was too much for me to absorb. You know, going to Australia and the dating somebody and this guy. I mean, I enjoyed it, but it was just Band of Brothers actually told a story. And you went from, you know, when they started in Dakota, which they did, and they moved their way up. It actually made sense. And really, look, if I didn't know these people, I'm sure a lot of people got confused too. There's a few people I wish I would have met Popeye. I didn't meet Popeye. He was probably at the reunion in Valley Forge where I was there, and I wish I would have met Popeye. You know, he's one of the – George Luz. I wish I would have met George Luz, his dad. In hindsight, everything is different. Gordon, yeah. Scott Gordon's father. I wish I would have met him. And my father would go to these places with my mother. They would go down to Gordon's and stay overnight. And my father would drive in there because my mom didn't –
She didn't
fly. He had a 64 Buick Revere. He was at a Compton's place for a reunion, and my mother was in it. And in the trunk, they had provolone and pepperoni.
And the car stunk.
Anyway, that was it. They had to get a room separate for the provolone. You know what I mean? But it was a different. It's just different. It's a different mindset and a different things were completely different.
I guess I knew outside of the World War II circle that Band of Brothers was a huge impact on society when they started running it every day, every year on Veterans Day on Spike TV. Yeah. When it became like Spike TV's Veteran Day equivalent to the Christmas Story on TBS, mm-hmm. that's when I knew that it had a huge impact.
Yeah, because I just, in fact, tonight I just sold one of his hardback books. You can't get them anymore. I got them on eBay. And a woman said she's getting it for her boyfriend, and she wanted a COA. And I gave her a COA, but none of this stuff, I don't sign anything. These are all, my father signed cases and cases of books. And because I could afford to buy them and get them, he was a publisher, so I got them cheaper than I could get them. But he would just sign all this stuff, and we would go to places. I got a real funny story, if you want to hear a funny story. We were at, you might understand what I'm trying to say. Because he was who he was, everybody wanted to be the person to take him somewhere. Does that make sense? I'm going to pick up Wild Bill. And he went to a lot of these places. But what happened is a lot of these guys were picking him up. They were drinking there. And he didn't like that. You know, they weren't taking him home. So I was taking him to places. And we were always available. Debbie was always available, my wife and whatever. And I took him one time. I was a VFW or something. I forget what it was exactly. And he was in there at a big round table, you know, 6-8 men there talking stories and signing stuff. And I says to him, Dad, you want a drink? He said, yeah, kid, get me a 7-7. And I said, okay. So I go to this, they got this little makeshift bar they have, right? And I go up to the counter and I said to the guy, the bartender, I said, could I get a 7-7? He said, sure, kid. So next to me, there's a guy I don't even know. And he doesn't know me. So he says, hey, he says, Wild Bill's here. I said, yeah, he says, it's pretty good. He said, yeah, he said, I'm really best friends with him. I said, you're kidding. So you can see where this is going, right? So he says, hey, he said, listen, he said, if you want, I can introduce you to him. I said, oh, man, I said, you're kidding me. So I play, right? Because I fear if he swings at me, I'll have to hit this guy, right? So I get my father's drink. And I said, he said, yeah, come on. So we go back to the table. Now I'm with this guy and I don't even know. And my father's talking. And this guy, he interrupts my dad. He said, hey, Bill. And my father said, what the frig you want, kid? I'm talking to people here. He said, Bill, wait a second. He said, what do you want, kid? He said, I want to introduce you to a friend of mine, Gene, right? He didn't really know me. And my father said, what are you, friggin' nuts? That's my son. So I'm waiting for this kid to swing at me. But he didn't. But that's a funny story. And this is the kind of, you know, this is the kind of the impact this guy had. And we just had fun with him. I mean, he was like easygoing. He was easy. He went all over the place.
I was thinking it had been kind of surreal for your father to be sitting around one day watching the news and hearing about Robert Kennedy assassination and then Sirhan, and then when they finally go to court, Buck Compton's prosecuting Sirhan.
Yeah, right. Buck Compton had a reunion out in California. My father went out there, and he was in Buck Compton, had a limo. And he said, hey, kid, you got it pretty good out here. So when Compton had his reunion, I was off. He actually rented a bus. There was a big, yeah, they were very close. And their station in life meant nothing.
Yeah.
When Johnny Martin was from Columbus, Ohio.
That's right.
Like I said, he was best of friends with my dad. And I think I don't know if he worked for a mailman or something like that, mail company. And he said, he came to my father in Philadelphia, and he said, Bill, I'm going to go out west and build. He says, you want to come with me? My father told him, get lost, kid. And Johnny Martin went out and built these massive opera, you know, nursing homes, all kinds of stuff, big time, millions and millions of dollars. But they were always, he took my father to Mexico, deep sea fishing.
That's awesome.
My father was talking about, and he just sent him a plane ticket. And that's just the way they were. There was no financial, you know, they didn't look up or down to each other. They were just one person. I guess that's what they went. If you see that when the Band of Brothers, when Johnny's talking about, they got the same tattoos, mm-hmm. and he said, we didn't think we were going to make it. These guys, the chances of them living were kind of slim. And that's what happened to them. So that was the way, that's just the way it was. It was interesting to see that camaraderie that they had together. Joe Toy was, they were very close to Joe Toy.
Yeah. Now, any fan of Band of Brothers has seen the director's edition and all the extra cut videos. We've seen your father and Babe revisit the Battle of the Bulge and Outside of Foy. But other than that, how many times did he have the opportunity to revisit overseas?
My dad, the first time I just found that my wife said, what the hell is this thing? I had a Monopoly game. We're taking stuff out of the attic. You know, if you got kids, you're trying to throw stuff out of it or get rid of it. So I go up in the attic and I bring this Monopoly game down. And I said to my wife, I don't know where the hell this came from. And it's a Dutch Monopoly game.
Wow.
My father brought it home in 1954. My father went to Holland. I forget. He knew. They knew him and Babe knew this. I forget the woman's name. They knew, and they would. I think they would stay at her house.
Yeah, I think and it's in the
back
there
probably
the
about 15 times, at least 15 times. He went back there. His print. If you ever saw his print, you ever see my dad's print?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. That print is made from a real picture from a newspaper in Margron. He's in a cemetery with this is in 1987 with flowers and a list of graves. This is before Band of Brothers came out. And that's what he's doing. He's walking around the cemetery. And I said, what could be a better picture of my dad than his picture of him, his back walking around the cemetery. And that's the that's a good real picture. So he's been back here a lot.
I think the name that I'm going to slaughter here, it was Honey and Mom Vermeulen, Vermeulen.
I think that was her name.
Yeah, Vermeulen.
Yep, I think that was her name. Yes, that name, when you said that, it rings a bell. Yeah, they would go back there, and they were very close with these people. But my mom would never go. She didn't want to get on no planes. And that's a simple thing. Your father's in Holland, all right? That has nothing to do with me, Mom. I'm going to score. I got a date tonight. See you later. Yeah, that was that honey is the name. You rang the bell when you said that. Yeah. I just remember him talking about it. And he, like I said, he had, I know he brought his Tommy gun home. It was in the basement of my house, and he gave it to the German guy across the street, Chick Schicklin. Because my mother didn't want it in the house. I don't know why she thought me and my brother were going to shoot it. And then he had a parachute that somebody took from him during after the Band of Brothers. That was the problem with a lot of these veterans, that they were actually shystered out of some of their stuff for whatever reason. I don't know, but I took most of the stuff out of my dad's house that I could.
He gave everything away.
They didn't think anything of it. It meant nothing. He's got a couple letters from that guy that said nuts. You know, in Normandy.
McAuliffe?
Yeah. A couple letters from him. Yeah, he was just, all this stuff really didn't mean any, empathy, he didn't mean any, I mean, the war meant everything to him, and his friends meant everything, but all this excitement meant this guy, he could have went anywhere, and he really didn't, he just didn't, you know, I kid people, I said, I could have put him on a bus in Philadelphia, drove the Californians and announced the whole time that I'm going to beat her. He would have came home a millionaire. I really couldn't do that. I mean, I wouldn't do that, but it was so popular. It was like insane. It was insane to have popular they were. All of them.
When the series came out, what was your family's opinion on the casting of Frank John Hughes to represent Wild Bill Garnier? You think they hit it perfectly on the head?
That's a good question, because here's the answer to that. People ask me that. And this is the truth. I didn't friggin' know my father. Now.
He means he didn't know him back then.
Sure, I didn't know him then at all. So you're saying, hey, was he like that? Well, my point is, all the members of the group said that's the way he was. That's all. You know what I'm saying? That's the only malarkey, Compton, all these people say that was him. That was Wild Bill. And that's the only thing I can go by, because I didn't know him at all.
Because when a series gets to the height of that the Band of Brothers has, to a large percentage of the world, Frank John Hughes will always be Wild Bill Garnier when they see his photo.
Exactly. Yeah, we were with Frank in September. They had that symposium in September.
World War II Museum in New Orleans.
There was a lot of the actors were there. Debbie and I was here, and my wife. And there was a big line. We were sitting in line signing, and Frank was sitting right next to me. We were close to Frank.
So the funny thing Frank would do in the series was he would push out his bottom jaw. He was always doing this.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather didn't do that till he started losing teeth.
Yeah, yeah.
Makes sense.
So it was funny to me, because you see pictures of my grandfather younger. He didn't have that protrude, but Frank did that. When he met him.
Some woman came in line and said, I was sitting next to Frank. I was the last one in line signing. And some woman came up and she said to Frank, you really nailed it. And I said, I think he nailed everybody. Yeah. And she didn't know what I was talking about, so we just moved on. But I was at the end of the line. I was at the end of. I mean, he's a nice guy. He was French, and all the actors are really. All the actors are really nice. We were hanging around with Doug Spain. He was funny, wasn't he?
Yeah,
they were all just nice people. I mean, like.
I have a funny story. I had twins in '92, so I definitely didn't read the book. And then when the Band of Brothers came out, we went to the Philadelphia premiere. I don't like to read either, and I didn't read the book. So when I went to the premiere, I was going up to the actors, asking them who they played, and then I would look for the veteran to see if the veteran was there. I wanted to see like if they were like them. So I met Muck, the actor.
Yeah.
And I said, wow. I said, where's the vet that you played? And he looked at me, he said, died in a foxhole in Bastogne. And I'm like, I was mortified. So I went over to my mother and said, I gotta read the book.
Yeah. Don't ask where Pinkala is either.
I started reading it on an airplane. I met Winters there. I didn't know who Winters was. I walked up. My grandfather always gave something out. So he had little pins. So I was giving pins out, and Dick Winters held his hand out, and then his wife did, and there was another woman with them. So he kind of looked at me like, who are you? Why are you giving them out? And I said, I'm Wild Bill's granddaughter. And he stood up and he saluted me. Well, I don't know what you're supposed to do to that. So I kind of hugged him.
But she mooned him.
And I ran off and I said, who is that nice looking gentleman with the white hair? And they're like, Dick Winters. And I said, Dick Winters. I ran back over and I said, thank you for bringing my grandfather home safe. And I hugged him. Like I was so, I couldn't believe it was, and he's so soft spoken.
Yeah.
Like I'm thinking, how did he run
Mennonite?
Anything. Like he was like, thank you.
He was a nice
never
man.
Trust they're, a Quaker.
All these guys were nice. They were all nice.
Debbie, for you, when you watched the series, obviously you didn't read the books, but I'm sure you heard some of these names floating around at some point through your, you know, around the house growing up or what have you. Was it like an oh hell moment, like when you saw their names being mentioned and like in certain scenes of the movie, like, oh, that name rung a bell? Or
yeah, we didn't talk about the war at all. Okay. We didn't know how he lost his leg. We knew he lost his leg in the war, but nobody talked about it. Nobody said how he lost his leg. It was just he lost his leg in the war, and that's it. And then I think we saw a glimpse of it when we went to California to see the premiere. But then when we watched it with him, it was insane. Like to watch that episode with him in the room was crazy.
It's Hollywood, kid. I'm pissing razor blades. It's all Hollywood, kid. It's all Hollywood.
Well, I was going to ask you, I didn't have the opportunity. My grandfather did grave registration over Normandy in Europe. And I was living in Columbus, Ohio at the time when Saving Private Ryan came out, and I know he saw it with my grandparent, my grandma and my mom, but I wasn't there to witness his seeing it. Was there anything in the series, like how, when your father was watching a series, how was his like reception of it?
He would talk the whole time until he stood it up in episode 6 and told Doc Rowe he's pissing razor blades.
So he commentated. He would say, that guy got shot. That guy.
Spoiler alert.
Like every single episode, he talked the entire. It was like the annoying person at the movies. They ask questions all the time. Well, he talked the whole time until he was pissing razors. And I said, wait, did you really have gonorrhea? Nothing.
It's Hollywood.
Wouldn't even turn. Well, we were hysterical. All of us were laughing. But he still never said a word about that.
He did tell me, like, one time I said to him, and this was the only conversation he ever gave. I said, Dad, and I didn't know that much about Bastogne myself at that, you know, World War II was in 67, 69, 70. It was like, it was still new.
Yeah.
So I said to Dad, I said, what was the deal with Bastogne? He said, well, let me put it this way, kid. He said, you're at the football field. You're in the football game. I said, yeah. He said, you're in a team you're playing. That's the 101st Airborne. And all in the stands, there's Germans. And that's the way he explained it to me, that they were surrounded by Germans. And that's the way. And I said, okay, I got it. And that was the end of that conversation. There was no big conversations. He really didn't want to talk about that stuff at all.
Yeah, I can imagine not. My grandfather never talked about it either.
Yeah, you couldn't push him.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't the pushing type.
And even after the movie came out and after the popularity, I still not one time ever asked him about the war. That just wasn't
Yeah, we
our
never filmed them. We never did
relationship.
anything like
I
that.
actually regret it. I regret not filming him while he was commentating the movie, but we didn't even do that back then. We didn't have our cell phones in our hand 24/7.
It would have been a grainy 8-bit video anyhow.
You know what I do have? You know what I do have? I have HBO did a lot of. I don't know if you're familiar with this at all. Each veteran was interviewed by HBO.
Yes.
When you see the slots in between Malarkey talking and my father talking, whoever's talking, that's a snippet from the interview. Well, I have this is VHS. I have tapes of of HBO filming my father and Babe that are not even part of this that series. And there's one thing, Babe thought that Richie Cunningham, what's his name?
Ron
He thought
Howard.
he said, yeah, he said, ah, oh,
He's
God,
going to play
I said,
me.
Christ, I hope he, Babe, I hope he doesn't play. I think that guy's a little screwy, you know. I mean, this is what they're told. And these tapes are funny as hell. The problem is now you need a VHS player to play them.
You don't. You have to. Oh, I'll help him.
I
You
was
got
gonna
a
say,
computer.
I can almost guarantee you there's a photography shop somewhere in town that does VHS to
No, they
DVD
do, but I'm saying
conversions.
the one that's up here closed. I'm saying a
Oh,
lot
yeah.
of photography shops are closing because everything is, look, DVDs are almost a thing of the
Yeah.
past, right? I mean, you can buy a car and you can't get a DVD player in
He
it.
still has his 8-track.
Yeah, I mean, I still got my 8-tracks. I'm ready to rock and roll.
Well, it's
But that
funny Gene mentions that because, and Debbie, you might have seen some of them. There's people on TikTok videos now talking about, hey, we bought the digital copy of these movies, and turns out the license is only good for 2 years. And people are like, that's why you buy it on DVD. There's a reason you want the physical hard copy of stuff because the
Right.
digital stuff they take away from you.
Yeah,
There's no
it's
physical.
crazy.
I tried to get HBO, and this would be great. Actually, they could actually, all these hour interviews, Popeye and the rest of them, Shifty, if they can get all that and put it together, that would be a great thing for
Yes.
people to watch.
Yeah.
Because now you're going to get an hour of my dad. You're going to get an hour of Malarkey. You're going to get an hour of Popeye. You're going to get an hour of Shifty and One Lung McClung. You're
But
going to
you
get
just
a
have Bill and Babe, right?
Yeah, but that's the only ones that are interviewed. I mean, I have that. Remember, Gordon said she so and so. I don't even mention people's name. This guy that was befriended and that turned against the company was supposed to represent him. He borrowed her father's, GVHS, and she never got it back.
Yeah.
So I mean, and it's really interesting. Like I said, where my father said, when I watch Band of Brothers, my father pops up and he says, and he's like I said, he doesn't lie. He said, I did a lot of killing, And I'm
Yeah.
thinking, hey, but that's the way he was back then. That's the way he was. And then Winters comes out and says, Spears and Guarnier are natural born killers. That's exciting to tell you. And then when we watch the first, all the premieres, my dad was allowed to go to any premiere he wanted to because he was HBO's contact. And me, when I say to that, it was Mirab Brooks, who was a beautiful, nice woman. She was terrific. Hello?
Yeah, we're good.
Oh, I lost you
We lost our
somehow.
picture anyway.
No,
Are
we
you
still
still
got
hearing
you.
me now?
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Right. So anyway, Rob said he can go to any premieres that he wants. So I would go with him because my mom wasn't around, and I was his plus one. And every time they showed episode, they show a piece of the first one, and they showed episode the first episode where he gets, he calls Winters and Quaker and all this stuff. And every time people say your father was a serial killer, where he's shooting all the horses and everything, but it was exciting to see for me and I for him. And that's the only time I saw my dad cry. Not watching the series, he was up on stage. I think it was in New Orleans, and somebody mentioned Skinny Sisk, and my
Oh.
father just broke into tears, which is really odd for me to see because he was so tough of a guy. You know what I mean? That was. My mother, when my mother died, he cried, and when he was on stage with Skinny Sisk, he got upset. Not with Skinny Sisk. And like I said, he knew all these people. He knew everybody. He knew Joe Toy's address, his phone number, his
He
grandkids.
knew
He knew
everybody's
everybody. He knew
birthdays,
close
anniversaries.
to everybody.
Well, I was thinking earlier, that was key to him putting those events on. For
Yeah,
our
yeah.
young audience now, there was no internet. And you
Right.
had your
Yeah.
city phone
Oh,
book, but there
yeah.
wasn't no
It was
national phone
mail
book.
man. Yeah. And my father had great, beautiful handwriting.
Yeah.
Right?
Perfect
Yeah,
handwriting.
he
He used to get pissed off at my handwriting.
Because when he signs his books, people say, "Is that really signed by him?" I said, I can't, I'm not signing. I can't copy the signature with the swirls on it. I can't do that."
Yeah.
And I wouldn't do that. So it's just, I have too much of this stuff to do that.
Well, I mean, it makes sense considering that was the only form of communication back then. I mean, we weren't typing, we weren't talking on the telephone. You A, had to write letters, but B, your handwriting was your voice.
Yeah, he answered every
letter he ever got. In fact, when I started his Facebook page, he was still alive and he would get a kick out of it. I would sit next to him and I would let him read all the mail he was getting, and then I would type back his response. But he got a kick out of it.
He did.
But he didn't want the internet. He didn't want HBO either.
Yeah, HBO. When the series came out, HBO was going to put HBO in his house so he could see it. He said, "Get lost, kid."
He didn't want another channel.
He didn't want any. He just had enough time using the thing he had.
Mm-hmm. Series, yeah. And I think Jeff can agree with this too, because we've talked about this on other episodes. Writing aside, I think one of the things that does set Band of Brother apart from the Pacific and now Masters of the Air is the pre-episode interviews with the vets sitting down and talking for that minute.
Yeah. And it's interesting. It's pretty neat. Yep.
That was, to me, that's like the hallmark of that series.
And you notice that they didn't introduce them the first episode.
No, they didn't.
They didn't want you to know who was who at first.
And Don Mularkey was a crier. Don Mularkey was very upset about a lot of stuff done.
But he laughed all the time.
He was the nicest man in the world. All these guys were really, really nice. And as soon as you told me I was their father, he was my father. You know, they treated me pretty good. They treated me pretty good.
I was in a limo one time with Carwood Lipton. It was my mother, myself, Carwood Lipton, his wife, and my grandfather. And Carwood Lipton leaned over to me and he said, "We didn't really curse like that in the war." And my grandfather looked at him and said, "Oh, that's right, Lip. We kissed each other good morning." Like, he wanted to make sure that I didn't think he cursed like my grandfather. And then Frank John Hughes said, when the History Channel bought the rights HBO, the Band of Brothers, they had to do the the curses. So Frank said, "You know, everybody's in there with a piece of paper." He says, "I woke up, I got a Bible." He said, "I was there the longest dubbing over his lines because Gramps cursed the most, I guess, in that series."
Yeah, having to make a makeup. It's so funny too, because like you'll see a lot of those shows on TV, and sometimes they just have the most ridiculous replacements for cuss words.
Yeah,
it's crazy. I'm sure Jeff's the same way. I can see the real photos of the members of Easy Company, and I can name off most of them just by seeing their face, because I've done so much research online, and plus seeing the series so much. Yeah, you know, whether it's Popeye or Lipton or Mularkey or, you know, obviously your grandfather and Babe, and it's crazy how such a series, and not only that, but the books have such an impact on, especially guys like Jeff and I, and people who are into World War II and preserving the history of World War II, how much of an impact that's had on our lives.
Yeah,
it's a different, I mean, it's a different world, and you know, like I said, he was just always my dad, so. He didn't act any different when Band of Brothers came out. He had a lot of friends. He had a lot of people that wanted his attention and wanted him to do things with him. He introduced me to Tom Hanks. I mean, that was my connection. He was a good man, and everybody missed him when he left. Not because of, just because he was very family oriented. When he said that he would do anything for you, and he would do anything for strangers. I mean, when he passed away, I divided up his estate between me and my brother, and I had his checkbook and stuff like that. And he wrote a lot of checks to people just to help him out. It's the way he was. And he really didn't have a lot of money, but he had enough to live well. He wouldn't move in with me or my house or even Debbie or my brothers because...
Yeah, we finally got him back at the VA, and the VA was offering him money
To move. And get an addition.
And I said, "You can put it in the back of my house. You have your own separate." He goes, "I'm not moving to the country."
Yeah.
And it was there's just, trees here. It just, that's the country.
Just as well, because he had a lot of visitors. He had Navy SEALs come to his house. He had police come to his house.
There was always somebody in his house.
Yeah, always.
Who's it? What are you doing? Some broads here.
Yeah, who are
he
they?
He doesn't know their name.
Yeah, who are they?
But some broads sitting in the living room.
I called him up one day. I said, Dad, I said, my wife was, she'd make them food or whatever, bring them food down. I said, Dad, listen, I'll come down and I'm going to get, and I wasn't going down there. I said, I'm going to get some food for him to come down. He says, not today, kid. I said, what are you doing today? He said, I got a couple of broads here. I said, who are they? He says, what's your name, sweetheart? So he don't even know who they are. So they're from Kansas. They're from Kansas or Missouri. And they just, his name and phone number were in the phone book.
Wow.
So that's how crazy this was. So, yeah, he was, but he could handle all this stuff. And he enjoyed himself. And that was it. If he enjoyed it, it was good enough for me.
No, I just really appreciate y'all's time, and I hope to meet y'all in person down the road sometime, because it'd be great to
thank you for having me.
I mean this is not,
you know, if we're ever going to Texas for a reunion.
We were what is the one with the Riverwalk?
San Antonio.
Yeah, we had a reunion there. We had a reunion there after Bannon Brothers.
Yeah,
this year we're going to be in San Diego.
Okay. Well, I come back to Jersey. I try to go back once a year. A lot of the family's there in South Jersey. But yeah, we'll do.
But Gene, Debbie, thank you so much for stopping by and giving us some of your time. And
we should do this, and we can get a couple of the kids on there. George Luz, we can torment him.
Yeah, please. If you
Malarkey's.
Let's arrange something. We'll.
George's sister Lana's a riot too. She's
who's that?
George's sister Lana, she's a riot too.
Scotty Gordon, Tracy
Scotty
Gordon.
Gordon.
Yeah, well, let's make it happen. We're definitely down for that.
We can definitely do that.
Yeah, we'll be interviewing you.
There you go.
Thanks again.
Thank you guys so much, and we'll talk to you hopefully soon.
This has been a Digital 410 production.